This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. I'd like to thank our sponsors who make our podcast possible. We tape our podcast with the ongoing support of Raider and Jason Sikora, our sound engineer. Raider is a hands-on IT service provider that integrates all of your needs for advanced technical support, effective communication options, and cybersecurity. Raider's motto is, you just want it to work, we understand. Please visit RaiderSolutions.com for more information. Iberia Bank and First Horizon, who are now one bank. Two relationship-driven banks, both leaders in the industry, have officially joined forces. The combination of Iberia Bank and First Horizon creates a leading financial services company dedicated to enriching the lives of their clients, associates, and their communities. I'd also like to thank Lafayette General Health, who has joined the Ochsner Health family and is now Ochsner Lafayette General. As one health system, Ochsner Lafayette General will provide expanded services and enhanced care from the familiar faces you already trust. Ochsner Lafayette General means more resources to help solve healthcare's toughest problems, reinvesting in our communities, and being further committed to health and wellness. Ochsner Lafayette General. Together means more. Learn more today at togethermeansmore.org. We're taping today in the beautiful offices of ViMed in Lafayette. ViMed is the largest independent, non-invasive ventilation therapy provider in the country. Originally founded as Sleep Management in 2006 by our guests Casey Hoyt and Michael Moore, ViMed provides equipment and home-based healthcare to serve patients with chronic obstructive pulmonary disease and other respiratory issues. Their patients have on average a 5.4% readmission rate to hospitals versus the 20% industry standard. This success is not only wonderful for the patient, but brings about a significant savings to hospitals who are reimbursed on the basis of patient outcomes. ViMed has experienced extraordinary growth and was the winner of the 2020 Junior Achievement of Acadiana's Large Business of the Year. With the ongoing COVID pandemic, the company has been well situated to address respiratory issues while affording patients the ability to be treated in their own home and stay out of the hospital. I've read of ViMed's incredible success and wanted to share their story with you and inspire other entrepreneurs who are dreaming up that next business success. So, along with Casey and Mike, we've also got Max Hoyt, father of Casey, who I know has been involved with you both from the beginning, and we want to hear that family story as we move on. Why don't we just jump in and let you tell your story? Who would like to talk first? Casey, would you like to start talking about your partnership and how you and Mike got involved as business partners?
I'd be glad to. So, thanks for having us, Jan. Appreciate it. Mike and I have been friends since we were 20 years old. I was introduced to him by a very close friend of mine, Brad Dunphy, who was my best friend growing up and was also one of Mike's best friend. And Brad passed away about 4 or 5 years ago, but he's still a major part of our thoughts and our connection in our lives. But Mike and I were just two business guys. He was a hustler. I was watching him come up through the ranks, working for a mom and pop durable medical equipment business. He was working for Home Care Supply back in, I guess, the late 90s, early 2000s. And then Home Care Supply ended up getting purchased by Praxair. Praxair then sold out to a big national DME competitor, Aprium. And every time we got together, hanging out at the in college and whatnot, and just at different parties and stuff, we'd always end up talking business. And so, you know, whenever it came time for Mike to really make a move with from Apria to on his own, he knew that I was running my family business with my dad. I had a trade show exhibit company called Nimlock Louisiana, which was a spinoff from Max's original Pixis digital printing business. And after I got out of college, it took me about 2 years before I was like, Dad, you know, maybe if I make a run at this and call it my own, we can increase the graphic volume for our Pixis. And so that's the genesis of how Nimlock Louisiana was created.
Now, you guys were both working as young men in college in sales in fields that most college students don't think about. Is that a family trait for both of you?
Not for me. You know, I grew up in Leonville, really on a farm and a welding and fabrication shop. So it was unusual to go off to any school or college, and especially in the medical field. I actually chose a profession, I think, you know, at the time I was 17, there were a lot of girls in that profession. So that drew me into the respiratory therapy field, and I got into it and enjoyed it. I liked the patient aspect of it. Went to work for a DME company, very small DME company, learned the business, but immediately became a sales rep. Didn't have any sales training or knowledge of how or where to begin, but I was good with, you know, managing relationships, creating relationships, reading people, just the fundamentals of selling anything, regardless of what you're selling.
It came naturally to you, and Casey, it sounds like it came naturally to you also.
Well, I was raised by Dad to be a hard worker, and I've held jobs throughout college. I actually, since I was 15 years old, my first job was at Hub City Diner as a busboy.
Okay.
I've ran a lawn service before. Yeah. I've waited tables. I've, you know, worked for a big catering company. My biggest sales job that really taught me a lot about having tough skin was selling alarms door to door for ADT in college. And we used to say back in those days, you got to get 25 no's to get to one yes.
Right,
But you know, that helped me to learn how to work with others and for others. And just at the end of the day, you know, I could see that the successful people in every organization that I was in were the hardest workers, not the ones with the most knowledge, the most experience, and so on and so forth. And so that's always been at our core over here at ViMed.
So Max, I know that you have quite an entrepreneurial background, and you've encouraged Casey and Mike from the beginning, from their earliest days. Casey's quite a chip off the old block. Would you please share your involvement in this enterprise?
Well, actually, myself and my brother Fred, we've also started several businesses of our own and so forth. And I reflect and look back at it. We grew up around a kitchen table where our mother and father were in a Hoyt refrigeration, Hoyt manufacturing business out behind the Lafayette Airport. And hearing about the day-to-day issues of employees and customers and product delivery and lead times and what do we have to do to satisfy and to get there? So business came naturally to us because we heard that every day around the kitchen table. And same thing for Casey and my other son, Spencer. And so all of them have kind of grown up and have multiple businesses of their own now.
So if we can fast forward then, you guys were both in sales, and it was in 2006 you started Sleep Management. Who wants to jump in on that? Would you talk about what it was like to start that company and what brought that about?
Yes, I mean, Mike was ready to make a shift, and he was the respiratory therapist that knew the business. He knew about all the relationships in town. We had a vision of keeping the company a respiratory-related business, and in order to do that, we had to call on pulmonologists and internal medicine and so on and so forth. Well, he had all the relationships, but he didn't know how to run a business. He knew that I was running my trade show exhibit business. I had probably about a $3 million top line business at that point in time with about 12 employees. He said, "Casey, look, I got the relationships hemmed up. I just need help with running the company." And so it was a good fit. It was a good marriage, and started Sleep Management back in 2006. I always tell the story of the first month we were in business, we had 30 O2s and 100 CPAPs come through the door. I mean, that's how deep Mike's relationships were and how good of a salesman that he was. And so we had a tiger by the tail from the minute we turned on the light switch. And it's been that way. We've stayed within our core, and we've been very respiratory focused. These days we do have our eyes set on other chronic diseases for the future of this business and the further diversification. But getting back to our origination, I mean, that's it. It was just two guys coming together. One had a skill set of sales, and the other had the skill set of management at that point in time.
I have a question. My husband actually uses a CPAP. I didn't realize the extent of issues people have with sleep management, with breathing,
sleep apnea. I didn't realize how big the market was. So when you got into it, Max had mentioned to me that there were really a lot of hoops to go through to be diagnosed. Patients had to go through physicians, and it was sometimes difficult to be diagnosed, and I guess to get appropriate care. Did your company make treatment more accessible to more people? Would you talk about that?
Yes. So our evolution into the apnea business, we've always provided CPAPs. We used to at one time call them sleep labs, which is where the origination of a positive patient for apnea would start. 2008, Medicare changed the rules and started allowing home sleep testing. So we made a big push to get, some of the local labs on board and really failed. But we knew that the writing was on the wall. So we took a big leap of faith, opened up a company called Home Sleep Delivered, which was the first home sleep testing company in the state of Louisiana, probably one of five in the country at the time. Payers weren't even paying for the actual procedure, but we knew that, it was around the corner. So we got into that business head first and have since then grown, that business throughout the state. It's a home sleep test. Patient gets the device mailed to their home. It's mailed back. And then now the therapy for that patient is all sent through the mail, set up on a video call, essentially. So, this whole COVID world that we live in, coincidentally, it's the perfect model. And we've seen, that business continue to grow and grow.
Yeah, today around Acadiana, most people still consider us a sleep apnea business. But what the fact is that sleep apnea makes up only 5% of our total revenue. That led us into treating more sick lung COPD types of patients. And what the evolution and the home sleep story is an important one, because when we embraced a new sales pitch and new innovation and went out and changed the way that people did business in the sleep apnea world, that was something that our manufacturer of our CPAPs, which was Philips, was keeping a very watchful eye on. They saw the transition. They saw Mike and Casey bloody in their nose in a new paradigm shift, right? And so when they were looking for somebody to bring the home ventilator to the marketplace, we kind of fit the description of the company that might get it done. And so they brought in the Trilogy non-invasive ventilator to us and said, guys, we're looking to get about 20 of these this month, was the quota from our rep at the time. And what we found is we went out to the pulmonologist around town. We ended up getting 20 in the first month.
That's amazing.
And it wasn't because we were super salespeople. It was because the need was out there. And you had frequent flyer types of patients that are struggling with a chronic disease that's terminal. It's not going away. It's only getting worse. And so it's the pulmonologist's job, it's the doc's job to just keep that patient comfortable with any means necessary, any tool that's available to them. And so whenever we got to the point where we didn't have to intubate the patient, we didn't have to cut a hole in their neck, jam a tube down their throat, we can now ventilate the lungs with a CPAP mask, if you will, and hook it up to the ventilator. That was a game changer for us. And so, that was the... Go ahead.
This was just in 2012, correct? So until that time, people that needed help to get the CO2 out of their lungs, to get help breathing, they would just end up over and over in the hospital. They didn't have anything that was really effective at home to help them. So I guess some people would cart around oxygen tanks. Like, how did they get help at home?
I mean, they essentially had a shorter lifespan as a result of not having access to that technology to treat the disease in the home. Those patients were repeat offenders in the hospital. Right. That was the sequence, and that was kind of how they ended their life, dying in the hospital.
So not only is it a quality of life issue, but I know the hospital's reimbursement rate has been flipped on its head. They're not paid per visit. They're now looking, especially with Medicare and Medicaid, they're paid on patient-based outcomes. So your timing with this and Philips' timing in developing the device was incredible.
And Jan, it's still new, okay? And so this is the market opportunity for our business. I mean, we're a publicly traded company. We have a 5% market penetration with this product. So that means that 95% of the patients who qualify for our therapy are going back into the hospital without a home solution. And why is that? It's just because it's still new, and it's still something that we're educating physicians around the country on the efficacy of this treatment. And so we've invested in multiple studies with KPMG and Harvard Medical School to really prove the good that we've been doing in the home. for every 6 patients that we put on therapy, we save a life. It's a 16% reduction in mortality with our treatment. And we also prevent hospitalizations to the tune of, we save over $20,000 per patient per year by treating them in the home versus treating them in the hospital.
Who is KMG? I saw that online. KMG and Harvard did studies. What was that about?
KPMG is one of the big 4 accounting firms. I mean, they're huge. They're worldwide. I mean, you can see Phil Mickelson sponsored by KPMG and the Masters. Big company, but they are numbers driven. It was a cost and analytical study. And the reason we did a second study is we needed more of a clinically driven, publishable study. So we took it to Precision Economics and Harvard Medical School and said, look, this is what we found with KPMG. What do we need to do to publish? And they beefed up the amount of patients that were in the study. They added 6 more months of data, and we found very similar results that we did in KPMG. And so we have those 2 studies to now prove the good that we've known since 2012 to the physicians that, you know, are questioning whether or not this works or not. So hopefully we'll make a dent in that market penetration number as a result of having those studies.
So how many employees do you guys have now?
With full-time and part-time, we're probably close to 800.
Oh, my gosh.
No, we're at 505.
Well, but with the part-time call center.
Oh, with the part-time. I got you. Oh, yeah. You're right. We have a contact tracing call center that brings us up to 800. You're right. Roughly about 160 to 170 in this building right here, and we're spread out across 39 states today with our core business, and then we've just recently hired another 200-plus for our Arizona contact tracing call center. Our model is, the way we've been able to grow so rapidly is that we do not have a need for brick and mortar with our business model. So there are some states that require us to have brick and mortar facilities, but it's not a function of what we do. We have respiratory therapists that are operating out of their vehicles, very lean and mean. They're monitored by GPS, and they respond. They're trained to respond faster than the competitor, and really to drop what they're doing and go for whatever the patient needs. We're a very patient-centric driven company. That's something that Mike taught us back in the day with his clinical background, and we've remained throughout the years of just putting the patient first no matter what and letting the chips fall into place.
How has the telemedicine technology affected your model and changed things? How do you deliver education now? How has all of these improvements helped your business?
It's been very helpful. We were investing in a patient engagement platform, a technology hub, if you will, that is in the home, and it talks to all the Bluetooth connectable devices that are inside of the home, reports back to our patients, and then it has a telehealth arm to it as well. That was being developed. It was actually in pilot mode back in March whenever the pandemic started. So we really fast-tracked its delivery because we needed to keep, number one, our patients safe, and number two, our clinicians safe during the pandemic. So we blasted it out with a smartphone app as well, and we've got about 3,500 patients on it today. The way that it's affected us, it's made us more efficient with our workflows. It's allowed patients to really interact with our therapists on a more frequent basis. So it's driving more positive outcomes for us. It's also changing the way that doctors are interacting with patients. You know, I think the biggest thing that the pandemic has done for us is it's the adoption from the physician community to telehealth is now a real thing. We've seen CMS make regulatory changes it's here to stay. And so our technology platform couldn't have been coming on at a better time, and it's definitely helped us get more efficient and provide better care.
Yeah, I think the pandemic will always be remembered as a pandemic, but in our world, the speed at which things got approved and that the velocity at which technology has been embraced and covered and paid for and welcomed is the thing that, you know, I'll remember the most from this pandemic, because things, the way that we were seeing patients and managing patients prior to, everything on our wish list that should have been approved and recognized, almost all got expedited, you know, 98% of it in a short period of time. Not because it was new, because it was needed, and you got all of the, you know, the technicalities and the policies out of the way to prevent those things from being used. So,
I read on your website about your patient care coordinators helping patients in the transition from hospital to home to go much smoother and safer. Can some people just avoid this hospital visit altogether?
Well, in most cases, our patients, you know, they're chronic. They're at that stage four level of COPD where they're, you know, they're at the end of life. They can hardly get to the mailbox or hardly get out of the house. When we take over, when we intervene with that patient, our therapy, our clinicians, our compliance almost drives that patient in reverse in the stages of COPD. All of a sudden, they can get out of the home. They can walk. They can exercise. They can visit with their grandkids. So it provides them a spark. You know, you can't reverse COPD. You can't cure COPD. But what we can do is alleviate, you know, those events that would ordinarily put that patient into a hospital. And in, you know, in most cases, a severe COPD patient, if they catch pneumonia, that's a death sentence. Patients don't die from COPD. They die from the issues that affect their lungs that, you know, as a result of having COPD, they can't fix, they can't cure, they can't get rid of that infection or that pneumonia. So we prolong, you know, the life of that patient and more importantly, just the things that they're able to do from that period of time that they get treated. So COPD, a patient basically loses the elasticity in the lungs. If you have a balloon, you know, you blow it up with air. If you let the air out, you don't have to force that air out. It's a elasticity function. So with the COPD patient, they actually have a harder time getting air out of their lungs. They can breathe, but then they can't push out. So when the alveoli, when the lungs become infiltrated with fluid or pneumonia, it's 50 times harder for that patient to get rid of, you know, what's in their lungs, even to cough, to have an induced cough where they're productive. That's a challenge for a COPD patient. A really easy way to experience what it's like to be a COPD patient, if you take a straw, full-length straw, and you breathe out of it and you make a good seal around it, it's hard to breathe out of. If you cut off 2 or 3 inches, that's essentially like, you know, the first cut is giving that patient a bronchodilator. The second cut is giving that patient oxygen. Third cut is fully, you know, allowing that patient to ventilate. So it's a simple exercise that really allows you to feel what it's like to not be able to push out and get air in.
How do you guys feel about what you're doing? You're really helping so many people.
It's very rewarding, and from my perspective of not being a clinician and getting into this business as a businessman, to see patients coming through the door willing to give you a bear hug from time to time, just thank you for what you're doing for me out there, and it's a warm business, right? But then to see the data and come out and see that for every 6 to 8 patients with these 2 studies that we save a life, and to start looking back, and we have 8,000 active patients today. Over the years, you know, we've had probably 50,000 patients that have come through our system, and to think about how many lives we've touched and extended and improved the quality of life, it's one of those things that you wake up every day and you lose sleep at night over not what's going to affect this business. You lose sleep at night over the growth, because how do we go grow more? Because the more we momentum we give to this business, the more lives we will save. And that's the way everybody thinks around here in this company. We're just a big batch of clinicians that are trying to help a lot of people fast.
So when COVID hit, you really had to pivot. You are the largest supplier of non-invasive ventilators.
Yeah, so we were called upon because we are a ventilator company. Right. So, you know, hospitals, physicians, states looked at us as the ventilator company, when really we were a company that treated patients with sick lungs. We just happened to have a lot of, you know, inventory on hand and relationships with manufacturers in order to get more inventory. So we were in a perfect spot, not by design, but we were able to help, you know, probably 15 or 16 states that could not find a ventilator anywhere in the world, let alone the country. And we were able to get them ventilators, get patients taken care of, and really manage the surge that so many people talked about and watched on TV as these numbers continued to go up. And, you know, our ability to teach hospitals and even clinicians how to use various ventilators was really probably our biggest strength. We made videos, and, you know, in a matter of 48 hours, we had 30 videos, how to professionally assemble a ventilator, use it, deploy it, in different circumstances and scenarios with different patients, different levels of severity. We made a library, and I think we had thousands and thousands of views, and it was from all over the country, and it was clinicians that were good clinicians but had never seen a home ventilator. Well, now all of a sudden they have to treat a patient in the hospital with a home ventilator that looks foreign to them. So that was our biggest, you know, strength, to be able to deploy you know, the resources around not only getting the asset, but knowing how to work it.
When you're saying various types of ventilators, I guess when I picture a ventilator, I think of the traditional method where you have to have a tracheotomy. At the beginning of COVID, I know they were putting more people on ventilators, probably way too soon, but they didn't know. People couldn't breathe and they were desperate for breath. I know that's evolved. Now hospitals know it's not always best to go with a ventilator. Is this non-invasive therapy different than the traditional ventilators?
So the modes and the therapy and the ability, you know, to push and fill up the lung and ventilate a patient is very similar. It's just doing it through a mask. That's a sealed mask that covers the nose and the mouth. What's changed clinically throughout the country is the patients that are less severe, they may have a lower O2 sat, but they're not immediately intubating that patient. They're putting that patient on non-invasive ventilation, which is what we specialize in, and weaning that patient off of non-invasive ventilation before having to intubate. You know, intubating a patient is very traumatic. You know, the longer that you're on a ventilator, the higher the chances are of infection and other things outside of ventilation that can go wrong with that patient. That's why you saw a big spike, you know, early on in the deaths associated with invasive ventilation. Now the protocols, you know, throughout the country have drastically changed, and even the medications have changed. So, that, you know, clinicians are armed with more tools, if you will, to treat these patients. Whereas, you know, in the beginning, no one knew what this was.
In the beginning, it was intubate soon, quick, fast, and then it started morphing into, wait, let's take it easy on the lungs, which played into the non-invasive ventilation world before we blow up the lungs with all that 100% O2.
Oxygen is still, you know, a primary treatment when you get into the hospital. Even, you know, a lot of patients that are testing positive for COVID that probably would have been hospitalized before, they're sending those patients home and prescribing oxygen and having them monitor the oxygen with a pulse ox, which we can do that now, monitor that patient from the office. So we know when that patient is desaturating before the patient even knows that that's going on. So again, technology and the evolution of being able to monitor a patient in the home, you know, is critical, and it's happening throughout the country.
Where are most of your patients? Are they still in this region, the Southeast United States? I know you're across the country, but where are the bulk of your patients?
I mean, we're very strong in Louisiana just because this is where we started. But if you think about where COPD is typically where we have landed and where our core is, and that's from the deep south on up to the coal miners' belt in Kentucky and West Virginia and Tennessee and things of that nature. We're strong in Missouri and Oklahoma and Texas. You know, COPD is more dominant in rural pockets of the country versus metropolitan for whatever reason. So our business has landed 75% in the rural sectors of the country and then 25% in the metropolitan zones just by natural default.
Is smoking typically what brings on COPD?
Yes. Yeah. Smoking and, you know, in the VA, they're three times more likely to have COPD or experience struggles with COPD because of the fumes and things that they're exposed to at war and whatnot. But primarily it's smoking.
Yeah. Agent Orange played a big role in a lot of the lung issues with some of these veterans. And, you know, we talk a lot about COPD, but we also treat ALS patients throughout the country that all end up on non-invasive ventilation. And then pediatric patients, which are mostly invasive ventilation, we also do that throughout the country.
Pediatric?
Like
asthma issues?
No, so a preemie that's born, you know, with respiratory syndrome or some issue where they're not able to breathe on their own. Oftentimes those patients are, and the family or the caregivers are taught how to ventilate that patient on a ventilator in the hospital. Once they're all sound and, you know, the hospital feels comfortable that they can go home, we transition that patient from the hospital to the home. In some cases, these patients will keep a ventilator, you know, 10, 20, 25 years.
I know there's a story about the help, how you got your start, and that helper may be sitting right here at the table.
Well, we started it on our own, but we darn near grew ourselves out of business in probably year two. And the way that this business works is, it's residual, so the more you sell on the front end, you get paid over a schedule. Mike and I were selling so much that we were literally growing ourselves out of business. And so we got to a point where we needed some support, we needed more funding, and that enter Max Hoyt into the business.
You want to share your thoughts on that?
They made a TV show. It's called Shark Tank out there. You know, today it's very common and so forth. So they just looked like they needed a 10% partner. They just didn't realize it at the time. So they let me invest, you know, at that point in time.
He's been a great mentor to both of us. I mean, he treats Mike like a son. And, you know, sometimes in our business relationship, these two right here, Mike and Max, get along even better than Max. That's the father-son in us. Yep. But yeah, no, he's been a great help to us in advancing our careers.
Well, I'll say this. When you're in your 20s and you're growing a business, you know, tenfold, there's things that you just don't know. And a lot of those things he had gone through. And, you know, there was a point in time where he kept us out of the ditch, quite often, in fact. And some of those scenarios, you know, if you look back, if we had not survived some of those bumps in the road, I don't know that we'd be sitting around this table. So all those things are, you know, they come back 20-fold, but things that we just didn't know.
Do you guys have advice for burgeoning entrepreneurs? Things you've learned, things you'd like to share?
You know, I mentorship is huge. Just as a nice segue to that, I even have a mentor, our chairman of the board right now, Randy Dobbs. It's good to sometimes have a mentor and a coach that's even outside of your family on some level. That, you know, Max played a nice role with Mike, and Randy plays a real nice role for me, and I know that Dad would agree with that. But the ability to understand that you don't have everything figured out and that there's other people out there that can help you if you collaborate with them, I think is probably the most powerful piece for advancing a business. And it's just, you know, coming to terms with that as a business owner can sometimes be a struggle because this is your baby. You started it from the ground up. You had the vision, the idea, you know how to run it. But then just getting another opinion from the outside, it can be so valuable.
I agree. I would just say, you know, as a partnership, you know, you hear oftentimes how, you know, all these partnerships rarely work out, and ours seems to have worked out wonderfully. And I think, you know, looking back, what's important in a partnership, we always have wonderful ideas, like thousands of them. Rarely do they all work. But when one or both, you know, have a bad idea and it doesn't work, you know, to continuously back one another up. And, you know, and once the employees know and the managers know that these two people and these three people have their back, like, you avoid a lot of drama, you avoid a lot of unnecessary issues. And that's really what keeps the harmony, you know, going and keeps things exciting is the fact that, hey, you might have a bad idea, I might have a bad idea, but we're not going to talk about it for more than 5 seconds if it doesn't work. We're going to focus on what's working and put that behind us. And, you know, and once, you know, you know, it's hard to explain, but it's a feeling, and it's just a culture that we've built around us, and we've surrounded ourselves with like-minded individuals. And I like to say we surround ourselves with people that are smarter than us, because that's just, you know, it's necessary in any business that's growing at the rate that we are.
You guys have focused on the home health industry, but I get the idea that you could really sell anything you put your mind to. Do you think you'll stay in home health as you grow and expand?
We have a wonderful engine over here at ViMed with a lot of good people, and we've brought many different products into the fold, and like Mike said, we've failed at some, dusted ourselves off, and succeeded at others. So ViMed, as you look at where we're headed, our average length of stay with our patient is 17 months. If you think about LHC Group or Medisys, these big home health guys, they have to get out of the home in 60 to 90 days. That's, you know, a regulatory thing. We really build relationships with our patients and our families. We become the primary point of healthcare. So it leads us down the path of how can we leverage that? How can we be more helpful while we're in the home? What other products that can we offer that are not going to be too far out of bounds from what we do today? We have a wonderful network of clinicians that are all salespeople that can bring different messages and different tools to physicians and so on and so forth. So that has our head going down technology, you know, offering technology solutions to help be more efficient in the home and be more valuable to physicians. But We will probably always stay within healthcare with the ViMed mission. As entrepreneurs, and you make money, you put money in your pocket, you do other investments. You know, we put our money to work. Mike and I are both pretty good at that, but we don't do things that will take us away from the day-to-day right. requirement from that that is ViMed.
As we close, could you share why you're living here? I mean, you guys could live anywhere in much larger regions. Why are you living here in Lafayette?
So when we went public, we did so by way of an acquisition. They acquired us, and they hired me and Mike to be the CEO and president of the entire public company. At that point in time, the headquarters was in California, and they were kind of leading us to think that they wanted us to move to California, and we just dug our heels in. We said, absolutely not. I mean, the thing that I love most about being in Lafayette is just the people and the culture and the entrepreneurial spirit that is inside of this town. There are people walking around that just want to see you succeed. They want to help you succeed. They love to hear these types of stories that you're digging into right now today, Jan. And you know, I think that is what makes this community special, is we're not sitting here as cutthroat competitors looking across the street or anything like that. We're all genuinely trying to help others climb the ladder.
Well, and as we've had to, you know, grow this business and recruit talent outside of Lafayette, outside of Louisiana, in some cases outside of the country, we're probably batting 1,000. You know, when we get someone in here for that, you know, 2 or 3 day tour, which is usually, you know, Max has a role, Casey and I have a role, you know, we take them out to dinner, we take them to the best spots, and we always end it with a hunt, usually, if it's hunting season, or a fishing trip. It's rare that someone says, wow, I couldn't, you know, see this place and call it my home. And we've been very successful with getting out-of-staters and folks from out of the country to move here, uproot their entire family, and they're still here, no one's left, and they love it, they brag about it, and the culture here and the people here is something that, you know, and I travel a lot, Casey travels a lot, you know, we know what it's like outside of Louisiana, and there's pros and cons, but there's something about this place that, you know, will lure you in and keep you here, keep you centered, and it's a great place to grow up and raise kids.
Yeah, we were here, but Lafayette has a lot of advantages, and our fiber network certainly, you know, helped keep us on the cutting technological edge, and so we have all the tools here that you can't move to the Silicon Valley or elsewhere in the world and still have any better, you know, services that we have right here that our city is offering. So it's a combination of our people and technology and culture and crawfish.
And crawfish, yeah.
You bet.
Great food.
I want to thank you all for being here with us today. Casey Hoyt, Michael Moore, Max Hoyt, thank you so much for sharing your story. And you didn't hear the intro that we normally do, but this podcast is called Discover Lafayette because it's such a thrill to share the success stories of people like you that choose to raise their families here and stay in Lafayette and make our community great. So thank you for taking time today. I know how busy you are. I'd like to thank our listeners too. So grateful for your continued support. And I know you've enjoyed this story as I have. You can find this story and tell your friends about it at discoverlafayette.net. Or even better, you can subscribe on your device. Just go to your podcast app, type in Discover Lafayette, and we'd appreciate your subscription. I want to thank our sponsors also. Of course, Raider and Jason Sikora for mixing this tape and making this show possible. I'd also like to thank Iberia Bank, which is now First Horizon, and for their ongoing support, as well as Ochsner Lafayette General. On behalf of Discover Lafayette, this is Jan Swift.